Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel and to our discussion this morning. We have a great group of panelists, and let me introduce them to you. First, I want to thank Ray Graff. I was out sick yesterday, and Ray filled in very nicely.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
No, I know it was.
No, it was good.
No, good. I thank you very much for
when
doing
I say
that.
Good, I mean not horrible.
I just appreciate that very much. Thank, not, you.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir.
Thank you. So Ray is on the panel this morning because, you know, I couldn't do it without him.
Thanks
so
again.
So here he is. WAMC's Ray Graff joins us this morning. Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick is with us. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
I, too, am grateful for the opportunity.
We always love having you here. So have you been to the Washington County Fair yet?
I have not, but I want to tell everyone if they stop by the Methodist Church fritter booth tonight, they can get a fritter handmade, not by me, but by my husband.
$1.50. A buck fifty, and it's the best sugar fritter you will ever eat.
I can tell you,
with.
It is the only cooking he will do all year.
Oh, he'll love that.
Well,
it's the Washington County Fair. I'll just give a plug for the Washington County Fair. It's going on this week in my home county and my hometown, and it is 24 years ago today. Yes, today, where I met my wife.
You are such a romantic.
Yes.
So you were in a 4-H exhibit, presumably?
No, I was one of those radio guys who goes to the fair to, basically
do a remote.
Just eat sugar fritters. and do a remote. And the PR person for the fair was my lovely wife.
I'll be darned.
She was not my wife then, but yes. And then we had a love, and she had a golf cart, so she brought me all over the place. And then she's been doing that pretty much ever since.
I can
since.
Hear the violins.
Yeah, it's a lovely story. It really is.
That is so a beautiful story.
We go and retrace our steps each year. It's a
24
it's a
years
thing.
Is a long time.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, 24 years, been married 22. So there
that's
you go.
Great. Congrats.
And
that's a long engagement. 2-year engagement.
Well, we went out for a year. We were engaged for a year, and then we got married.
Okay.
Is that long?
It took a year to plan the wedding.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. We had to check everything out.
Kick the tires and what on the golf cart.
I worked in radio. I think she wanted to make sure I could actually hold out a job.
Good point.
Mike Spain is with us. He is the associate editor of the Times Union. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you all with us. Well, welcome to the program, and we invite you, our listeners, to join in. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we will get to your letters a little later on. So, Colombia's government and the country's biggest rebel group reached a historic deal Wednesday evening for ending a half century of hostilities in one of the world's longest running and bloodiest armed conflicts. The president there hailed the agreement with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, FARC. As an opportunity to turn the page on decades of political violence that has claimed more than 220,000 lives and driven more than 5 million people from their homes. He said he would hold a plebiscite on October 2nd to give Colombians the chance to vote on the accord. Without their approval, implementation cannot begin. How good news, how hopeful are we that this will stick,
well,
I guess.
You have to think that a couple of generations have gone by where people haven't even lived in peace in Colombia. And the hope that, you know, people have just tired of that existence and are ready to compromise and go forward without a life in constant fear and constant war is a really positive thing. You know, the motivation is there. You know, you just wish that it's a beautiful country with sustainable ability that it could have a decent economy. It could just the fact that they've reached this shows that there's a resolve to change things. You just really hope them the best, and the U.S. should do everything it can, which might mean don't touch anything.
Right. Just kind of stay out of it. Right.
Right. And let them chart their own future.
Yeah, I'm hopeful, too. This is good news, but it had an earlier effort in the 80s, I think, failed And, you know, you always get the resentments because so much has happened. Can people put that aside and forgive and move on? It happens after every war. I mean, there are still resentments in this country, you know, towards Japan and Germany. You hear a little bit of it when you talk to World War II veterans. So it is difficult going forward. But I agree with Mike. We should just stay clear and do what we can to help.
I'm skeptical of the prospects. I mean, they're so involved. FARC is so involved with cocaine trafficking. Sure. The money still being so good for that then in absence of that, what do you do? And eventually there will be another push against forces if the cocaine trade continues, right? Or am I wrong?
Right, there's supposed to be some built-in provisions to end this cocaine trade, but it is a lucrative operation. But FARC was built or created out of, you know, they were seeking positive reforms in that society. They had good intentions, led astray by the need to sell cocaine to raise money to support their operation.
Well, there's still a market. In an international market for cocaine, and that is going to be pulling on those who produce it now. It's going to be necessary to come up with an alternative economic base, you know, agriculture. It could, believe it or not, be a great tourism country. You know, you have other great countries like in that part of the world, like Belize, you know, nearby, that has a great tourist trade, and, Costa Rica. And, you know, it can happen. It could be a phenomenal thing, and all you can do is hope that their resolve is there and they will be able to put aside that resentment that you spoke about, Judy, and that is not easy. But new generations want to have a different course.
There, to Ray's point about the skepticism, we should note that the accord has not officially been written yet. There has been a verbal agreement. There is not, so we still have to write the... Well, we don't have to, but they do.
Yeah, it's important that they do.
Yeah,
we're not good at that.
No. That they write the accord, and then obviously it'll go to the vote, which will probably be a yes/no vote. And it says in this Times article that we were reading and quoting from that all parties sort of look at the Brexit vote as a cautionary tale as to what can happen when you have some time, and we do in this case, from late August to early October, to kind of think things over.
Right, because an earlier president is not in favor of this, and he is a very popular guy. And so there is that cause. You know, one of the striking lines from the New York Times article was the fact that as an early concession, they have released the children soldiers, and it brought home the point to me that, you know, how ingrained this war has been in this country, and the fact that they have children who are functioning as soldiers.
Yeah,
war is a horrible thing.
And the other point is that the homicide rate has fallen sharply over the last several years, although it does remain one of the deadliest countries in the world. So even though those numbers have decreased, as you were indicating, it's still a very deadly place. And if we can eradicate that, it would certainly be a good thing. Any comments, Ray?
No. I still can't fathom how FARC starts out as Marxist and then ends up as ruthlessly capitalist cocaine dealers. It's amazing. And I guess based on what I've read, the public is staunchly against them. And I'm amazed they've lasted this long.
We are going to, we welcome your letters on that topic. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We have other topics to discuss. You're listening to the Roundtable panel. Ray is here, Judy is here, and Mike Spain. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. I am going to, we obviously want to get into politics because, well, we have to. You know, there's a lot to discuss. But before we do that, I am going to, so we'll do that after the break because I don't want to get started in it and then have to go back. So let's talk about the ethics bill that Governor Cuomo signed in New York State yesterday, Mike. We should be thrilled about this, or we should be happy about this. We're going to have ethics in New York State. There's not going to be any of this corruption anymore. It's all fixed. Everything is better.
Isn't that wonderful?
Right?
Well, you know, what particularly is unusual about this ethics reform bill that the governor pushed through with a message of necessity in the final days of the state legislature is that the good government groups like Common Cause and NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Research Group, and Citizens Action are not happy with it. And the reason is it's going to require that organizations like theirs and others that lobby at state government and other lobbyists for other causes, et cetera, will have to be much more forthcoming, much lower thresholds for people to have to release the name, for these organizations to release the names of their donors. And the governor says this keeps it transparent, this keeps it honest, it keeps all the lobbies honest. They have to be a lot more disclosing about their transactions, for example. If a lobbyist calls a newspaper editorial board to discuss a editorial position, the lobbyist is required to disclose that, and certainly that feels like an invasion of privacy. And contrary to the way things operate, people should be able to talk to the press confidentially, and we certainly feel that way. And, you know—
Is that even legal?
That's a good question, Ray.
It's certainly ridiculous.
it is
legal schmeagle. It's just stupid.
Susan Lerner from Common Cause says that they're examining their options. It is possible that some will challenge this in court or some aspects of it in court, and it may be up to the courts. But it's certainly a response to a not a good situation in Albany where a lot of campaign contributions have gone to quietly supported some efforts, and you don't know where the money's coming from. It's hard to track down. It doesn't close the LLC loophole, which allows you to have several limited liability corporations that are under your control all donate money to a candidate or to a particular cause. And, you know, many believe it's not the remedy for what's wrong in Albany.
My father used to use an analogy that where the house burns down and then you go out and rebuild it by putting up a new mailbox.
That's a good one. Like Will Rogers.
Isn't that kind of what we're talking about here?
You mean it might be window dressing and it really doesn't get to the heart of the problem?
Yeah.
I think that's what the complaint is. And the governor will use it to pressure, and who knows, you know, maybe he's just using it to get back at these good government groups that have been pushing him to push for reform.
Right, you want transparency? I'll give you transparency.
Right, yeah, you got to be transparent.
And also note that this measure got passed very hurriedly there was a big necessity, message of necessity, but it took forever for it to get signed, so we lost the necessity in that respect.
That's a good point, Judy. He rammed it through at the very last minute, had to take a special step by giving it this status of message of necessity so it didn't have to sit for 2 days before the legislature voted. And then he waited 2 months to sign it. So how urgent could it have been? And he didn't do it in a public ceremony and hand out pens, and it was just kind of done in his office with a press release.
And now it's done in the summer where most people are on vacation and out, and so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so ethics reform, I don't know. It's called that. We'll see what happens.
But there's room to grow in that, right? Yes.
Right. And, you know, it's a really nice mailbox.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it does make it for a good headline.
It does. Right. And, you know, Cuomo signs ethics bill with few cheers. That's the headline we used today in Chris Bragg's story.
All right. We got some letters, and most of them have nothing to do with the content.
So like
Columbia
like
or ethics bills in Albany.
No,
right?
It's mostly
we know
about
what they're about.
Columbia.
Mostly about Ray and the fair, but that's all right. We did get this one from Chris, who says the root cause of the problems in Columbia is that cocaine is incredibly addictive. If the U.S. wants to solve the problem, it should invest in more research towards discovering and developing anti-addiction medications. Yes, the answer to the drug problem is more drugs. We got this from Craig, who says, Joe says he was at the Washington County Fair. Ray asks, were you a 4-H exhibit? Cranky and hilarious. Love it. Keep up the great stuff. That's why I listen. Thank you.
You're half right. Cranky, certainly.
Tom wants to know where the good doctor is. Alan is on vacation for a few days.
He's gearing up for that Berkshire Ramblers show at the Arlo Church September 3rd.
What's the phone number? Anyone know?
Something with a 55 at the
1955
end. I can't remember.
Okay. You can look it up online. We promise. We'll even give you the number later on. Bonnie says, I hereby nominate Mr. Raymond Graff, a permanent rotating panelist on par with Rosemary, Ms. Post, et al. I now call for a seconding of the motion. Listeners, what say ye?
No, I if nominated, I will not serve, or whatever Lyndon Johnson said.
I think you're in the regular rotation. You already are in the regular rotation. I think whether you want to be or not.
This is a regular rotation?
Yes, I think they want to increase frequency.
Yes. Forget it. And we got this from Matt, who says, congratulations to you and Kelly. Nina and I have been together for 27 years, married 25 earlier this month. It doesn't get easier, but with a fine spouse makes marriage great.
It's pretty easy, don't you think,
Judy?
Yeah,
I think it's not, like, really hard.
After the first 5 or 6 years, it's kind of you kind of coast to the end.
You know, Ivanka and I have really been getting along for quite some time. It's really been lovely.
It's great.
Let me get the tear out of my eye out of the coasting part. Yeah, very nice. Send them off. Let them make
downhill
fritters.
From here, eh?
Yeah, everything's there.
One cooking a year, I noticed before.
Make the fritters, honey.
Alexander says the drug trade will never be eradicated, not in Colombia, not here in the U.S. The question is what matters more to the Colombian people, peace or a drug-free FARC? We will take a break. We will stop there for a moment, and we'll get some news from the BBC. When we come back, we'll talk politics with our panel, Ray Graff, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain. I'm Joe Donahue, and we'll continue our conversation with your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and the roundtable panel continues after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Here's a headline from the New York Times. A conflicted Donald Trump tries a new tactic, sticking to the script. After months of flailing attempts, Donald Trump has begun to recast his political message in more structured terms and wrestle with his temptation to go off script. As his campaign seeks to revive his fading candidacy and turn the focus this fall to Hillary Clinton's honesty and integrity. Working off a script from his reshuffled team of advisors, Mr. Trump is also drastically tempering his language about the signature issue of his campaign, immigration. After winning the Republican nomination on a promise to deport all 11 million immigrants who are in the United States illegally, he indicated on Wednesday night that he was considering allowing some to stay if they had lived in the United States for many years, lacked criminal records, and paid back taxes. We're going to come out with a decision very soon, he said on Fox News, signaling flexibility on an issue that sharply divides undecided voters. He is expected to deliver a speech on immigration next week in Phoenix. We will remind you that there was a speech actually scheduled for today that was put off for a bit and will now be given next week in Phoenix. Who would like to begin?
Well, I think that interview on Fox, was that the Sean Hannity interview last night where he sat with the studio audience and then it sounded like Richard Dawson on Family Feud or something. In favor of allowing immigrants to stay?
Survey said.
Right. Those against letting immigrants stay. And then the people would applaud and cheer and stuff. It was
very
much like
that.
And, you know, I think the finger is up in the air. The wet finger is in the air.
Certainly is.
Seeing how the index finger.
Oh, yeah, that one too.
Is up in the air, and they are testing the waters, or they want to see how their base reacts. I don't think he can alienate the base of people who supported him all through the primaries, and he has to turn, you know, just as every candidate has to turn after the primary season. And this is what is going on here.
Well, I understand the point, although it isn't by going on script and not saying the outrageous things that he has said in almost every, I mean, obviously they're the things that are reported, but there are the day-to-day rallies of which he goes off on Crooked Hillary and so forth.
Sure.
And if he is now scripted, is that going to turn away the people who come out to expect him to say outrageous things.
Well, I'll say two things and let others jump in. First of all, his script is a pretty good script. I heard his speech in Charlotte, and I listened to some of his other speeches since he started using the script, and they're very well written. I don't think he's writing them. There's too many different words. And the...
Whoa! Ouch.
Well, I mean, he has a limited vocabulary. And they are very effective. They're setting him up as, hey, folks, maybe I say too much, but I'm not going to lie to you the way Hillary does. I mean, he really, and those are from the script. I mean, so it's well written, probably the Bannon influence. And then the other is, where are the people who flock to him before going to go? They're not going to go to Hillary. You know, maybe some of them will go to Gary Johnson. But really, I mean, he's got them. He's really got to get the middle-of-the-road Republicans to hear him reach out to Hispanics and reach out to African-Americans. He's not going to get the Hispanics or the African-Americans in large numbers, but the middle Republicans will say, see, he's reaching out. I guess I can support him.
Or they lose hope because he's another package candidate and he's more of the same and then they just not vote.
Well, it's always a risk.
You know, first of all, I don't think it's going to last. They've tried this before.
Yeah, it seems like you're just. We're 2 days into this, right? So it does seem like you're just waiting for it to crumble apart.
And frankly, he's a lot less interesting when he's on script. For me, I say, and I think he may alienate a few people because one of his charms has been the fact that he's this wild and crazy guy. And now he's kind of he's talking in an odd way, in a scripted, he's a little bit like a robot.
He seems very pained, doesn't he? I mean, I think so. He doesn't
seem constricted, doesn't
he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's just.
Well, I mean, all the candidates are. All the candidates do this.
I think you're right. Yes, that's right.
Well, they all do it, except that...
We call it... The other ones call it discipline, and I think that's what Trump is trying to do here, is be a disciplined candidate.
But his
It's a tad late in the game to try, but you got to give it a shot.
But being undisciplined, I think, is one of his charms to his followers.
That was what made him different from other candidates, I agree.
But his followers are not enough to get him to the White House. He needs to show people that, gosh, I'm not going to fly off the handle every moment.
Yeah, it may backfire on him, and it may alienate his original supporters, but, I mean, I think that's the strategy. It's to keep them, you know, say enough things. Like the other night, he reiterated that he still wants to build a wall. It's going to have a great big door in it, though, so people can come in the right way, legally, paying their taxes, et cetera, et cetera.
Some Anderson windows.
He's snarky today. Spain is very snarky.
I like it.
Gold star.
But he is staying on. I just wonder how long Kellyanne Conway, who seems the voice of reason in his campaign, and this guy Richard Bannon from Breitbart can coexist. And something, you know, how long will that last, Judy? I mean, that's
the question. Also coexists with the kids because they seem to have a great influence. And then also, so how is that all going to play out?
I can't believe the fact that we have this under the microscope. Do we say this about Hillary's staff? Geez, do they get along? Does A get along with B? It doesn't seem to be
as in disarray. I mean, how many campaign managers have we gone through in a year here, and the campaign has continually reshuffled? I think it's fair to put it under the microscope because of the dynamics that are at work. We've changed messages a few times now. So
in what substantive way? I've heard the press say he's going to change messages. He's going to go lighter on. He's got these new advisors. He's going to go lighter on Hillary, and then the next day, laid into Hillary.
Well, and I think that's why it goes under the microscope, because you have a campaign manager in the beginning, Corey Lewandowski, who says, we're going to do this, this, and this. Then we have the kids that say, no, they shouldn't be doing that. They're going back
forth.
And then he's gone. And then he's off script. That makes the campaign manager mad. Then eventually they leave. Then somebody else comes in. And so I think, I think in any campaign that would be interesting.
Well, and the larger question is this how he's going to run the country?
Oh, that.
How many days until Election Day?
It's
80 something.
Yes, I just read it was 11 weeks, and Justin Trudeau of Canada said, "Why do you take so long?"
The question I've been asking myself.
Yes.
Yeah, we've been at this for a very long time. You know, he's trying to appeal to African Americans, but he's not doing so in a good way. I mean, he can't help himself sometimes from sticking his foot in his mouth.
Well, I think this is also, and you're absolutely right. I think there's, to Mike's point, there is a speech and it's written, but it is still, by many standards, quite inflammatory, and picking up many of the main themes of the campaign,
maybe softening the way he presents it. But I mean, I think the analysis has been pretty widespread that he's not speaking to African Americans when he makes a speech in a lily white suburb, and there's none in the audience, no black people in the audience. He's appealing to moderates who want to see him soften himself in order to rationalize voting for him because they don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton and they're struggling.
When you think about, so the next you're shaking your head there, right?
No, I'm looking into space, thinking about what Mike said.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, you're thinking
listening.
Through. That's
yeah.
great. I also want to get to this story. I found this to be a fascinating story. So Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, with his presidential campaign behind him, looked to advance the movement he built during the Democratic primary race with the public unveiling on Wednesday of a political organization focused on addressing economic inequality and taking on special interests. Well, what could go wrong with that? While the establishment of the new group, Our Revolution, had been eagerly awaited by many of his most ardent supporters, it has been met with criticism and controversy over its financing and its management. A principal concern among backers of Mr. Sanders, whose condemnation of the public, of the campaign finance system was a pillar of his presidential bid, is that the group can draw from the pool of dark money that Mr. Sanders condemned for lacking transparency. The announcement of the group, which was live-streamed on Wednesday night, also came as a majority of its staff resigned after the appointment last Monday of Jeff Weaver, Mr. Sanders' former campaign manager, to lead the organization. Several people familiar with the group said 8 core staff members had stepped down. The group's entire organizing department quit this week, along with people working in digital and data positions.
Right. Certainly idealistic people are not going to want to stick around for this. But, you know, one of the things I'm missing in this story is the voice of Bernie Sanders. The only thing we're seeing is that he's sticking by Jeff Weaver and keeping him, and apparently his vision for how this next revolution proceeds. Now, was last night the night they were going to have the house parties all over the country?
Yeah,
kind of withered, I think.
Yeah.
It's put a dampener on it.
It's interesting how things can turn. It's almost a story from a journalistic's perspective that's too good to be true.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I think any time you have a revolution like the Sanders revolution, or perhaps, you know, we'll see it with Trump if he is to win, or even just trying to put together a conventional campaign, it's very difficult to adapt to become an institution, because then you have to take on many of the characteristics of the very institutions that you had rallied against to get rid of. And you risk having the same conflicts and the same problems and the same compromises that you don't have to have when you're a revolutionary candidate.
I question the timing of this. In other words, you're in the heat of a Hillary-Trump battle. Every moment of every news hour is saturated with the same thing we heard an hour before, but it's over and over and over again. And so if you're Bernie Sanders, why not wait until after the election to announce this?
I wonder. And if you want to be a conspiracy believer, you could suggest that maybe he's doing this deliberately so that the moderate people, the Democrat Republicans who may vote either way, are seeing, oh, Hillary is a lot different than Sanders. Sanders, you know, he's way out there, and that's not what we're, I don't know. You know, maybe it's putting attention, making Hillary look a little better. I don't know.
Aren't they also trying to influence elections on the down ballot?
Yeah, I think that's it. And also, I do think, I mean, if anything, it seems strange that it was not something that was released immediately after the convention, because that's really when you had the momentum. So I understand the point. I do wonder, I also think the timing is weird, but I wonder if it should have been done.
Right. Interesting.
Immediately after.
If he did it immediately, it would have deflected a lot of attention she was getting and a lot of momentum she was getting. So maybe it was deferential to that. But if they're going to have, as Judy says, if they're going to have any influence on other races going on, they better get out there now. Doesn't look like it'll help.
But I suspect that true Bernie supporters are maybe disillusioned by this approach to fundraising. I mean, you have a lot of Bernie supporters in your audience. I'd be interested to see what they say.
So when they say the pool of dark money, what exactly are they talking about?
Well, dark money is described as money that filters into campaigns that you don't know its origin, but it's usually major benefactors or people with a lot of influence, you know, a lot of money who are trying to, you know, like the Koch brothers or George Soros, who are trying to influence the outcome.
So in other words, if Soros pumps in $15 million, he doesn't know about that?
No, I think it's just a description about people using their huge money. And sometimes you can set up a political action committee. After the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on Citizen United a few years ago, you don't have to disclose where the money's coming from if it's supporting a political campaign, not an individual candidate. So, you know, it's murky.
And the Bernie campaign prided itself on being funded primarily through, what, $27 donations? Or
on average,
yes,
yeah.
On average.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll hit a couple of other topics before we end our hour together. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Circus Circus, featuring the Beechnut Miniature Circus, alongside circus paintings by Everett Shin, Norman Rockwell, and more. ArkellMuseum.org. Hudson Valley Wine and Food Festival, Dutchess County Fairgrounds, Rhinebeck. Over 100 wineries, breweries, distilleries, specialty foods, live music. September 10th and 11th, HudsonValleyWineFest.com for ticket information. The Mount, Lenox, Massachusetts, presenting Touchstones, a literary series hosted by Kate Bollock and featuring novelist Emma Straub this afternoon. EdithWharton.org. And Restore Dutchess, announcing the newly opened Habitat for Humanity Restore in Dutchess Plaza on Route 44 in Poughkeepsie. New and gently used furniture, appliances, and more. HabitatDutchess.org.
Couple letters and we'll go on to other subjects. Eric writes, in 2008, Hillary's campaign had this kind of attention because it was in disarray. This year, it was well managed and no shakeups, therefore no news. Also, we got this letter who said, you were talking about how Trump is trying to get blacks and Latinos. True, but you are not being fair as to his motives. He truly wants to bring these people up, not keep them down and beholden to the government without helping. It's amazing you guys don't see that. But isn't the characterization that they are down across the board part of the problem here? Isn't that there's an article in the New York Times this morning as to, I'll bring up the headline as soon as my computer agrees, that black voters don't recognize Trump's view of their lives. The picture that Mr. Trump has been painting of black America, a nightmare of poverty, death, and danger, is one that African Americans say is unrecognizable. So that whole idea of bringing them up, where many African Americans are saying, well, what about allowing us to be where we are and to continue and to have the lives that we want to have?
Right. From what I've heard, he tends to have a very close view of the diversity within the African American community. They're all types of people living all different kinds of lives with different sources of education. I think at one point he talked about you people. I mean, that kind of summed up his approach to this.
I mean, that's what got Ross Perot in trouble. I mean, using exactly those words, I think, you know, referring to groups of people as you people, meaning I'm not part of you, you know, I think he does not have a sense of the diversity in the African-American community. It certainly would be consistent. He seems to be, there's no gray in his world. I mean, things, not no pun intended, I mean, are pretty much black and white. That's the way he approaches things.
I think that's a very good observation. Is that really him, or is that just the way he has consciously attempted to portray his campaign?
Yes,
it is very,
yes or no.
Very
quick
black
decision.
And white and
yeah,
and
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And almost comic book clarity to everything.
Mm. When we all know it's everything in the middle.
Yeah. We talked about the story on Tuesday, and it's been in the press most of this week about the EpiPen. The EpiPen, which at one point was selling, you can get a pair of EpiPens at the pharmacy for $60, and suddenly it went up and skyrocketed in price up to $600. We talked about that issue on Tuesday. Since that time, there has been a lot of legislation proposed and a lot of politicians who have come out and said it's time to go after the manufacturer and the pharmaceutical giant Mylan over the cost of EpiPens. And this morning we read the story of Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who his daughter, Heather Bresch, is chief executive of the company, which appears to have hiked the price of the EpiPen 400% since 2007. The device, which is used to treat severe allergic reactions, now costs more than $600 per dose. The price increase has become a public relations disaster for Mylan, and at least four of Manchin's Senate colleagues are either pressing the company to reduce the cost of EpiPens, asking it to explain the price increase, or requesting federal regulators to investigate the matter.
What is the official explanation for the rise? There must be some rationale for the rise.
Well, the rationale, and I don't know if this is the official company line, the rationale is, and what would many believe the reason to be, is because their main competitor went by the wayside. So they didn't have anybody in competition with them. So that was the reason believed to be that the, why the price went up.
That's not going to win the PR battle.
Yeah, the drug itself is only a few cents. It's the application of it in the pen and the mechanism that they own the patent to. It sounds terribly cynical, but you've seen it many, many, many times recently with pharmaceuticals, is they are raising the price because they can.
Right. This yes. isn't just about the EpiPen. Any conversation I've had about this, someone will say, well, yeah, this I paid this for this medicine and this for this medicine. And people are arguing it's definite sticker shock over the cost of these medicines. And I think that's a broader issue that, you know, we need to address.
And there's also, and I'm trying to find the exact figure, but then there was a figure yesterday that was being bandied about where of the huge raise that the CEO, Heather Bresch, who is the daughter of the senator, received as compensation as this went up.
Well, I mean, what is the purpose of a pharmaceutical company? Is it to provide, drugs that save people all over the world, or is it to make billions of dollars for investors? They try to do both, and in the process, a lot of people don't get the drugs.
Well, I think they'll all make billions of dollars even if they don't raise the EpiPens to $600.
Yeah.
They won't make
as many
billions.
And by the way, those prices are going to come down.
Her compensation went from $2.4 million to $18.9 million from 2007 to 2015, which is a 671% increase. Meanwhile, the prices of EpiPen went up 461%, just for those of you keeping score at home.
Well, during that period, they very cleverly edged out the market and kind of ran their major competitor out of business.
Why she got the big increase.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the ways they did it is I was talking to a colleague yesterday who said that their physician gave them EpiPens. They were like giving them out and getting people, to have them, and then they just had to renew the prescriptions, and it wasn't too expensive, and it was good, safe behavior, and now it's going to cost them to. Now that they rely on it.
And a lot of these costs are passed on to the health insurance companies, which in turn pass the costs on to the consumer in terms of higher premiums.
And if you're a Medicaid recipient, it's passed on to the taxpayers.
Let's go to a couple of letters in our final moments. Joe writes that it was reported on your station yesterday that Trump Incorporated has little or no black representation in its corporate structure. Any comments on that?
Is that surprising? There was a survey yesterday done by, I'm trying to remember who did it, but it was a report on NPR that looked at the tweets and the social media of the people who were in the Trump campaign, and they were consistently racist and pretty difficult, and they did a survey of the social media of the people that worked in the Clinton campaign, and they're much more disciplined. They were much more within, you know, there were no examples of overt racism and harsh criticisms of groups of Muslims or blacks or others. So is it a surprise that it would be an unfriendly place for people of diversity? I don't think so.
We got this note from John, who, just a clarification, said he'd been an RN for 40 years. Not long ago, the cost of 1 milligram of epinephrine to a hospital pharmacy was on the order of $1 or less. It is the EpiPen itself that has been marketed for easy self-administration. There is also Joel, who says, doesn't the New York Times article contradict the Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter movement? I'm not a Trump supporter, but I guess I'm under the same understanding that African Americans are not being helped enough by the current political parties. And also this from Robert, who says, great news from your roundtable. So happy to hear that the African American community is no longer disproportionately plagued by unemployment, poverty, drugs, crime, etc. This is what the black leaders have always complained to us about. Please inform them that all is well there. Just because Trump said this, it's all untrue suddenly. I don't think that was the point we were making.
No, I don't think anybody said all is well there. I think we were discussing about how that is the only part of the African American community that he is focusing on, and it is a very diverse community, I think was what we said.
That was the point. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. We're out of time for this segment. We'll be back with another panel tomorrow. Ray, thanks so much for
my
being
pleasure,
with us.
My pleasure, sir.
It's very always nice to have you on the program.
You're going
to
stay well for a while now?
Yeah.
Great.
I'm going to try. God, I'm going to try.
Take your vitamin C.
Thank you very much. Judy Patrick, thank you for filling in. Appreciate it. Very
You're
nice
welcome.
To have you here as always.
See you at the fair.
And, oh, good. Oh, tonight, Steve will be making the fritters.
He will.
Fritters? Excellent.
Yeah.
Good. It's right in the main drag of the fair. You'll have a great time. And, Mike, I'll ask you uncomfortably on the air, but will you join us tomorrow?
Love to.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.